Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Open Mic Session. Today's topic is Troubleshooting SCA Problems in WebSphere Process Server. My name is Joseph Lam, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide number 2. In today's Open Mic session, we will start off by introducing to you our panel of experts for the day. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to troubleshooting SCA problems in WebSphere Process Server. Next, our panel of experts will answer questions that were pre-submitted to us through email. Then, we will open the lines for live Q&A period. And finally, the session will end with a summary of the Open Mic session. Moving on to slide number 3. At this time, I would like to introduce to you to our panel of experts for today's call. Our panel consists of Pamela Fong, Senior Software Engineer with the WebSphere Process Server Development Team.
Hi, everybody. My name is Pamela, and I'm a developer with WebSphere Process Server. I joined IBM 8 years ago to work on the prototype for the WebSphere Process Server. Later on, became the version 6.0 release. I specialize in asynchronous programming and distributed systems. Currently, I'm the technical lead for service component architecture.
Thank you, Pamela. Next, with Jeff Brands, Senior Engineer, WebSphere Process Server SWAT Team.
Hi, my name is Jeff Brandt. I've been working for IBM companies for the last 13 years in business process management and SOA integration solutions, both from a consulting and a development engineering perspective. I had the pleasure of working with Pamela on the SCA team during the initial product development for the WebSphere Process Server product. At that point, I transitioned to the WPS SWAT team, where our team was responsible for helping resolve critical customer situations. Now transitioning into a new role for technical product management within the IBM BPM organization.
Thank you, Jeff. Next, we have Alex Wood, Software Engineer, WPS WESB Development.
Thank you, Joseph. I've worked in the development team in the IBM Hursley Lab in the UK for over 10 years on various different WebSphere products, and over the last few years on WebSphere ESB and WebSphere Process Server, and in particular on the import and export bindings for JMS and MQ.
Thank you, Alex. Unfortunately, Paul Slater will not be joining our discussion today, so I'm going to move on to our final subject matter expert for today's call, Lalitha Chandran, Software Engineer, WebSphere Process Server Technical Support Team.
Hello, everyone. This is Lalitha Chandran, and I have been with WebSphere Process Server Technical Support Team for about 6 years now. I enjoy working on SCA and transaction-related problems.
Thank you, Lalitha. And before we get to the question and answer period, our panel of experts would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number 4, and please go ahead, Lalitha.
Thank you, Joseph. Slide number 4. If you have ever had to solve a SCA problem or have questions on how things work in the SCA world, this is a perfect platform to have your queries addressed. This open mic will cover SCA problems and behaviors like transactions, error handling, or recovery. We also have experts who can answer questions on messaging bindings. We won't cover complex performance issues or BPC-related questions. I will pass it to Pamela to address the first question.
Okay, moving on to slide number 5. The first question that was submitted to us was, sync over async is an anti-pattern. How do I ensure that I'm not using it? So you're correct. Sync over async is something that we strongly discourage people to do. And this pattern is categorized by trying to invoke a component service that is asynchronous in nature, and we try to make the invocation synchronously. And that would force SCA to switch the call from a synchronous call into an asynchronous call under the cover. When this kind of processing takes place, a transaction is being broken up into two pieces in order to avoid deadlock. And also, the applications would not be scalable because of all the block threads waiting for a response to come back when the switch happens. So to avoid that, first of all, is a good understanding of what kind of services you're trying to invoke is really important. For example, if you're trying to invoke a long-running business processes or a human task or some kind of binding that has asynchronous protocols, those services need to be invoked asynchronously, as well as a Java implementation, what we call a POJO implementation, that implements the service async info interface. It also takes on an asynchronous behavior. And so static analysis is required to make sure that when an invocation is made to these services, we make sure we do asynchronous invocation. Jeff has partnered with another colleague at IBM, written a paper that details different behaviors and how they interact with each other in the system. So if you download the document that we're presenting today, you're going to get a link to the paper. And also, in version 7 of our release, we have added an additional messages. This on slide number 7. We issue a warning telling the customer that sync over async has taken place, right? And we're now breaking up a transaction into two when we do the processing. So this is a warning message that's going to the systemout.log file during runtime. So if you're on version 7 or later, you can always open up your log file. And if you see this warning, that means that something in the application needs to be looked into deeper. Okay, so we can move on to slide number 8.
Okay, so for question 2, this is Jeff Brent. I'll go ahead and read the question and answer this one for us. We see a transaction that we know will not finish. As a result, we keep seeing transaction XA errors in our logs. We don't see any messages in our SI bus queues, and there are no failed events. We have been told not to delete the transaction logs. If that was the case, then what's the best way to deal with this transaction? Move on to slide 9. There's a couple of ways that you can deal with these transactions, and as the question does indicate, you are not supposed to delete the transaction logs for the WebSphere application server. These transaction logs with the name have been given us problems over the years because with the log name, it seems that some of our customers have been deleting them as if they contained historical information. And the fact is that this log directory stores the working runtime a representation of the XA transactions and chatter that's associated to those transactions for the WebSphere application server transaction manager. So if you have one of these situations, the best thing to do is make sure that the resource that being associated to the transaction is available. As this question says, they know it's not available, then there's two options for you. You could go into the administrative console, and there's an information center link provided with the presentation that will walk you through the admin console panels for administering the transaction. In addition to this, you would need to administer appropriately the data source that's associated with the transaction. Say, for example, if it's a DB2 database that was defined within WebSphere application server and used within a transaction, then there is appropriate actions for you to take over on the database specific to the database vendor. Finally, there's a script that can be used to handle these transactions. So the Information Center link provides you an admin console view of resolving it. There's also some sample scripts that can be linked to from the Information Center. And as part of the presentation material that you've been provided, there's a link to a Redbook that contains a sample script as well. So there's many ways for you to deal with this without deleting the transaction logs. If you're having problems with the situation and and have run the scripts and have used the admin console, then we would encourage you to open up the PMR and work with us to resolve these issues. Deleting transaction logs can cause some severe difficulties in the system. It can often be seen when we have process instances that perhaps are stuck in a running state or other issues with transactional integrity in the system. And with that, we will go ahead and transition to slide 10 and go to Alex. We'll provide this question and answer.
Thank you, Jeff. So question 3 is, what settings can I follow to ensure I don't end up with huge depths of messages on my SI bus callback destinations? So this question refers particularly to the callback destinations, which are internal queues associated with the JMS and the MQ imports. And the depths on these queues are important because large depths can lead to delays in processing responses and also, in extreme cases, to timeouts in processing the response message off the queue. If we can move to slide 11, please. So really, there are two best practices which can be used when managing messages on these queues, the first of which is to make use of the SCA response expiration qualifier, and this can be set on the reference, which is calling the JMS or the MQ import. And setting this qualifier to a finite value will ensure that messages on those queues will expire after a definite time and will not be left on the queue indefinitely. Obviously, that expiration should be set with the service in mind that's being called and should be relevant for that particular service. So in most cases, that service will not respond after a certain period of time, and therefore that expiration can be set to avoid this build-up. Another best practice when managing messages on the callback queues is to avoid, if possible, mixing calls to long and short-running services, MQ or JMS services, because in those cases where you have a mixture of long and short-running services where messages, responses are coming back after sometimes short periods of time and sometimes very extended periods of time, is that the short-running responses will suffer a delay because of the large number of older messages on those callback queues. So you will get delays in those cases. So it's best to split those into workloads into separate imports. So that is the answer to question 3, and we'll now move on to question 4, which I believe Lalitha is answering.
Thank you, Alex. Slide number 12. What are the key parameters that need to be tuned for better performance with asynchronous SCA invocations in Web3 process server? Slide number 13. I think the main purpose of this question is to encourage users to understand the importance of performance tuning. Lack of tuning can result into a lot of SCA problems like timeouts, deadlocks, and hang threads, especially during high volumes. For asynchronous invocation, the main parameters to be tuned are max concurrency in the activation spec and the thread pool settings. You will find more information in the support portal and the performance red book, and you'll find the link to the performance red book in the presentation material. Slide number 14. Question 5. Is there a big difference in terms of performance overhead in an asynchronous inter-module interaction versus asynchronous intra-module interaction? Should the former be avoided? Slide number 15. Synchronous invocation provide better performance than asynchronous invocation. But if you have to choose between inter-module and intra-module asynchronous invocation, there is no big difference. Consider you have two modules with a mediation in one module calling a long-running business process in another module. You have two choices here. You can either have mediation invoke the SCA import asynchronously to avoid the sync over async switch, or you might be tempted to have the mediation invoke the SCA import synchronously for a performance gain. But in such cases, option number 1, that is asynchronous invocation, is a better choice, and there is not much difference in terms of the performance overhead between both the options. I'll turn it over to Pamela to address question number six.
Okay, thanks, Lalita. Question number six. I want to understand which queues are created in the context of SCA modules and what is their purpose. Okay, so there are different category of destinations or so-called queues that were used in the system. So now in slide number 17, first we look at the SCA core asynchronous messaging. That is, if you want to make asynchronous invocations in between components or services that doesn't involve any, you know, third-party protocols, if you stay with SCA core invocation and also SCA binding, then minimally, you will see a module queue being created for each SCA module. And then if there are export and import bindings that are declared in the module, each of the import and export binding will have an external queue for external communication with other modules. In addition, there will be optionally internal queues for each export and import and also a component queue. Now, I said optionally because in more recent releases, we have eliminated the usage of internal queues for SCA core processing. That makes the system go faster, reduce the workload on the messaging engine by using fewer number of queues. However, if you have event sequencing or store and forward qualifiers that you specify on the application, then those internal queues will be created when the system is when the application is deployed to the server. Those queues are used for buffering and sequencing to make sure that events are delivered in the correct order. So these are the minimum queues, module queue, and import-export queues. Now, if there are third-party protocol bindings used in the module, moving on to slide number 18. For example, JMS binding uses three queues, request queue, response queues, and callback queues. The callback queue is always generated by the system. It's used to store correlation data. The request and response queues could be generated by the system for, you know, putting request and response messages in, but user can also have the option of using a custom queue that the user created and just tell the binding to use them, right? Now, if the application contains web services binding and if SOAP over JMS is used, then there will be additional JMS queue being created for the communication. Those are the queues that are created for SCA modules. So moving on to slide number 19. How do I interpret messages that are parked in the queue and what do I do with them? So for SCA module queues, you might see some messages. Moving on to slide number 20. Right. SCA module queue is used for a few different purposes. As we eliminate the usage of internal queues, we're basically routing all the messages to the module queue to be processed by the module. So apparently, all the requests and responses will go through the SCA module queue. If the message arrival rate is higher than the rate that the application can process them, then you will see message built up in the queue, apparently, right? In addition, the module queue is also used to store transitional error messages that are the messages sometimes being rolled back into the queue, contains exception information. We store additional metadata on the side sometimes, and once the retry is exhausted, we package what had gone wrong, which would have persisted in the queue, and we send them back to the caller. So those are transitional error messages that are stored in the module queues. And also when the expiration qualifier is used, messages that expire while they're waiting to be picked up will be turned into expiry reports. And those reports can also sit in the queue. In the latest release, in version 7, we no longer store intermittent error messages in the queue. Those are being rolled back with the original request and sent to the failed event management system. And also, for expiry reports, those are automatically cleaned up. In version 7, If you're on a system earlier than version 7, I believe the latest fix pack in each of the releases also contains an additional enhanced algorithm to automatically clean up the expiry reports. So the messages, in general, messages that are sitting in system-generated queues are system messages, and they're not to be manipulated by the user. We offer Fail Event Manager to help the user to manipulate these messages, either resubmit them or delete them. However, if there's ever a need to clean up store messages or expiry reports, let's say you're in a very old release and some of the enhanced algorithm is not in place, then please contact IBM support to see whether, you know, which fix packs you require to get those messages properly handled, or there could be cleanup scripts that you can use. But please contact IBM support for the proper procedure to do that. One thing I want to mention is that if it's a JMS queue, as Alex mentioned earlier, the callback queue could, you can potentially see correlation messages being built up in the callback queue. Now, those are also normal because the messages need to stay there waiting for the response to come back so that we can correlate which request is, you know, for which response. So those are also system messages that needed to be there. So that's the answer for question 7. Moving on to the next slide. Question 8, I'll hand over to Alex.
Thank you, Pamela. So question 8 is, what level of control do I have over the MQMD header fields of an outgoing message from an MQ import? What fields can I set in the MQMD, and how can I set them? So if we can move on to slide 22. So the short answer is most of the fields in the MQMD header in an MQ message can be propagated out of the MQ import by setting them statically or dynamically in a mediation flow. And that can be done using a variety of different primitives in a mediation flow, most notably the XLT mapping primitive or the MQ header setter primitive, which is specifically for this purpose. Now, some fields in the MQMD require some additional configuration in the MQ import in order to be set in this way, and some fields in the MQMD are not able to be propagated because of they're not allowed to be propagated by the MQ APIs. So there is a detailed series of developer works articles all about setting MQ headers using the MQ import and mediation flows and the various ways of doing it. And there's a link in the slides for that, which you'll get when you, if you download the slides. Another piece of information is that in WebSphere ESB and WebSphere Process Server version 7, the user context fields within the MQMD can reset, but that requires some additional configuration in the destination, the MQ that's used by the MQ import. That's also detailed in the DeveloperWorks article, which is linked here. If we can move on to slide 23, please. So I'll, in a little bit more detail, I'll mention here the fields which do require some additional configuration in the MQ import to be propagated, and those are the message ID, which you need to set the request message ID options in the MQ import to a specific value of copy from SCA message, and that will allow the value that you have set in the mediation to be used in the outgoing message instead of a system-generated one. A message type, and here you have to uncheck the default value, which is to use the type of interaction to set that field, which will either set it to a datagram or request, depending on whether it's a one-way or a two-way interaction. So you have to uncheck that default value in the import, and that will allow the value that's been set in the mediation flow to be propagated. Apply to queue. You have to uncheck the default value again here in the MQ import, and the default of the field override reply to queue of request message. By default, the reply to queue that's set is the one that's used by the import to receive responses. So in order to set your own value, you must uncheck that. And similarly with reply to queue manager, you have to uncheck the same box in the MQ import in order for that to be overridden by the value you've set in your mediation flow. And I will also mention here that the fields which you cannot propagate or you cannot override in the MQMD of the outgoing MQ message, and those are five fields in the MQMD, and they are listed here: backout count, the counting token, the put date, the put time, the offset, and the original length, six fields. And all of those are system fields and cannot be overridden. So I will now hand over, we'll move on to question nine, and I believe Jeff is going to answer this question.
Thanks, Alex. So for question nine, we have a long-running process in Module A making a synchronous call to SCA import Module B. We are aware of the fact that it is not a good practice to make synchronous calls from long-running BPAL. However, we would like to know the expected behavior for the invocation activity in the case the related transaction timeout expires. We observe that if Module B provides a response after the transaction timeout of the invoke activity, then the BPAL successfully navigates to the next activity. This will happen after a small delay. No exceptions are raised for the BPAL to catch, and there are no double messages towards Module B. Is this expected behavior? So going back to part of this question, the second sentence, we are aware of the fact that it's not a good practice to make synchronous calls from long-running BPAL. Now, that is not necessarily a true statement. It's a perfectly legitimate use case to make these synchronous calls from long-running BPAL. Say, for example, you have an order process that needs to retrieve some information about the inventory. The service that can be called is a very normal response time in the seconds. So that's a perfectly legitimate case where a long-running process may want to call a service synchronously. To answer the real question, is this expected behavior, we move on to slide 24. Now, this is not expected behavior. If the transaction is timed out, the transaction manager for a WebSphere application server is going to mark that thread of execution as being timed out. When the invocation is returned from the synchronous target, we would expect that the qualifiers would be notified that this particular thread of execution has been marked for timeout. At that point, we would expect that the invoke activity of the long-running BPAL process to receive a service runtime exception, and a fault handler could be used or fired there for handling that particular timeout scenario. So in this case, if that's indeed what you're seeing, then we would recommend that you raise a PMR, and the particular traces that would be interested in taking a look at are for SCA. Transaction equals all is for our WebSphere application server transaction manager. And com.ibm bpe.star equals all is for our BPC engine to find out what had perhaps happened to the service runtime exception that should have been raised. So, again, to answer the question, this is not expected behavior, but we'd be perfectly happy to help you investigate why this is not processing as we would expect. I'm going to go ahead and answer question 10 so we can move on to slide 26. We have a long-running process, Module A, making asynchronous calls this time to an SCA import Module B. If Module B provides a response after the transaction timeout of the invoke activity, we observe that Module B is unable to send back the response to Module A. It seems to us that the SCA is having problems getting a connection to the SI bus as a consequence of the transaction having timed out, and the SCA code is retrying the connection for a long time before eventually throwing a CWSCA 2001E error. SCA unable to establish connection to SIB for a duration of time. The call initial request afterwards is retried, resulting in duplicate messages towards Module B. Is this expected behavior? If so, what would you recommend us to do to overcome this issue? Moving on to slide 27. Now, in this case, we have an asynchronous call from a long-running process. That's going to bring two system characteristics into play here. To address part of the question is that a timeout itself, an individual exception for transaction timeout itself in the WebSphere application server does not cause connections to be unavailable from SI bus. It's a little bit backwards, right? if we cannot get connections to system resources, then you have a higher likelihood of timing out. So in order to resolve this situation, then we want to review your allocations of resources connections for your SI bus messaging engines. That would perhaps alleviate the issue and avoid timeouts on a regular basis, but it won't eliminate them because timeouts can happen for many reasons. So one thing to understand about asynchronous calls is that there's different retries. There's one for long-running processes but through the business flow manager. And when you're making SCA-based asynchronous calls, there's also some retry behavior provided from the SI bus. Now, those are system characteristics that are provided for your benefit to retry on conditions where an intermittent issue has occurred. Unfortunately, it can cause what would be perceived as a duplicate message. And it's not necessarily that the message is duplicate. The system didn't create two messages in the system. It's really the retrying behavior of a particular message. In this case, it was a result of the asynchronous call. So there are two places built in. We have built-in retries of WPS. There's some links in the presentation material that I've provided that will help explain where these retries are occurring and how to set some of that behavior. So we move on to slide 28, and I will be turning this over to Pamela for this next question.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Question 11. I have set a request expiration qualifier. After the expiration time, does the request get moved to the Fail Event Manager or any other exception queues? Okay, so moving on to slide 29. So first of all, request expiration would implicitly impose an expiration on the response, right? Because if you say, you know, my request is going to expire within a certain amount of time and the caller does not get a response within that amount of time, it would just assume that, okay, I'm no longer interested in the response anymore. So setting an expiration on the request will also impose an expiration on the response. Now, either one of those messages, either the request message or the response message, if they are not picked up within that expiration limit, they will get turned into an expiry report by SIBUS. And the report will be sitting in the queue, and they would get picked up by SCA. SCA will then notify the calling module of the expiration and also remove the expiry report from the queue. In this case, no fail event will be generated, and the caller is notified on a best effort basis. I say best effort because, you know, in the case of, let's say, network partitions and the message is expired on the other half of the network, you won't be able to find out, you know, in this case, if you're expecting a callback, right? So there's a little slight difference between doing defer response and callback. So if you're doing a callback, you might get a asynchronous notification, meaning your callback routine might be invoked if something has expired. So that's on a best effort basis. If you're doing a defer response, usually people will be pulling for the response. And at some point, if SCA detected that the time has elapsed long enough that the message is no longer valid, then you will get a expiration exception just by the act of pulling for the response from the caller side. In either case, you will not see a fail event for this expired messages. So that's the answer for question 11. Moving on to the next slide, number 30. And that's for Lalisa.
Thanks, Pamela. Question number 12 on slide number 30. We see a huge debt in one of the SIB queues and suspect it might be causing performance problems. What is the fastest way to deal with such an issue? Slide number 31. Yes, huge queue debts can have an impact on the performance of the system. The in-memory representation of a queue is analogous to a linked list, each link being around 2 to 4K, that is excluding the body of the message. This will have an impact on the garbage collection, which might slow down the system gradually. If you have a NQ import with a request response, a callback queue will be used with a selector. In such cases, all the messages are traversed when the selector is first used. This can again have a performance impact if your callback queue has a lot of messages. The best way to deal with such situation is to avoid it in the first place. Ensure the messages are consumed, or if under error conditions they are not consumed, design your application such that they should expire. I mean, this again goes to some of the questions we have discussed, like question number 3. Slide number 32. The other thing you can do to avoid such a problem is to use the high message threshold to stop queues from becoming too full. Also, when you have too many messages, please do not view them using the administrative console or SIB Explorer. I will turn it to Joseph at this point.
Thank you, Lalisa, and thank you to our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this point in time, Mashallah, we would like to open the lines for a live question and answer period.
At this time, we have no one in the queue with an audio question.
Thank you, Mashallah. I do see a question here in the group chat, so I am going to announce the question verbally, and then hopefully our panel of experts will be able to answer the question. So the question goes, when you click on Applications and then the SCA modules in Admin Console, it takes an enormous amount of time to display, and after displaying all SCA applications, clicking on Mediation Application also takes a long amount of time to display its properties. Do you have any advice on why this might be happening or how it can be solved?
This is Jeff Brent. I guess you would have to ask how many modules are installed on the system, right? If it's a very large number, then we would have to figure out what part of, you know, perhaps caching or visualization that we need to optimize to allow for the view to refresh quicker. We're obviously very sensitive and would want to work towards resolving performance problems. The only other thought that I would be is if it's a network deployment environment, then perhaps the deployment manager's memory is not capable of receiving back an information with a large number of modules installed. There is some must-gather information for performance problems through the IBM support site. We recommend that you take the information that is requested and then would open a PMR to investigate further.
Thank you, Jeff. And at this point in time, Mashallah, can we open the lines one more time just to ensure we don't miss anyone who have a questions in queue?
The first question is from Edward Skisoff. Your line is open.
Hi. My question is, if I have a web services import which fails after several retries, does the message go to the failed event manager in this case?
So this is Jeff. I could help you answer that question. And it's not related to the import itself, right? The question is how was the import invoked? You will get a failed event if the web service import returns a service runtime exception. If the call to the import itself was made asynchronously. Now, that's true most of the time, but not all the time, because if the component that's calling the web service import is a BPEL component, then the service runtime exception will be returned back to BPEL components for them to allow them to for business processes to model in fault handling for service runtime exceptions. Does that help answer the question?
Yeah, I'm just using WebSphere ASD, so I don't use the proxy server.
So
in this case, it will generate the failed event manager message.
If the mediation flow component is invoking the web service import asynchronously.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the questions that was provided there is has a link for invocation patterns. I don't know which question offhand.
I believe for MFC, as the caller invoking a web services import, the service runtime exception will also be sent back to the mediation flow component. They kind of behave like the BPL component in their configuration. This is internal system request that particular team wanted the runtime exception to be sent back to them for processing.
What version are you on?
7.
7? Okay, yeah.
So what is it, yes or no? Will it be in Sales Manager?
You should see the runtime exception being sent back and report into the mediation flow component. There will be no fail event in this case.
Okay. Because I'm trying to trigger Fail Event Manager somehow in this case, and I'm just failing miserably, so I don't know if there are any suggestions how I can do it.
You can use a Java component in the middle to invoke.
I see, and then it will go.
Right. Use a Java component and do a invoke async with callback to the web services import reference.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it documented somewhere? Is there some sort of...
There is a paper that Jeff and I wrote long time back on version 6. I believe it talks about the BPL behavior. MFC wasn't mentioned, but we need to update that paper to include that version 7 information. Yeah. It's called Exception Handling in WebSphere Process Server.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And also, it does depend with an MFC on how the MFC was called, because you can, if the MFC does not process the failed event, then it will pass straight through and back to the core of the MFC. And so that, if that was asynchronous, that could also at that point cause failed event to be raised.
If there's no, you know, the failed terminal is not wired or anything,
right,
you know, things would get serviced all the way back to upstream that way. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Ezra Venkalapati. Your line is open.
Large payload of the BPL input variable is causing out of memory in BPC Explorer when we click on the process instance in the BPC Explorer. I'm not sure whether this question is out of the scope of this presentation, but I thought IBM expertise all the expertise from IBM on the call thought of posting this question there.
So, yeah, that's a BPC question. Wasn't necessarily part of the SEA agenda, but there is a performance report from Dominic Meyer on ways to tune your BPC Explorer application to avoid out-of-memory.
Okay. Well, such for that. Thank you.
Guillaume Bourdais, you may ask a question.
I'm trying to achieve monothreading in a SEA module, and I've set two properties, max concurrency and max batch size to 1, and I'm having a problem because I'm seeing concurrent processing with different messages. So I wonder if that's an issue for the support, or if I'm doing things wrong, basically.
Our programming model fully supports multi-threading usages, but I'm curious what kind of problems you're running into. I mean, I assume that you have some kind of export, like an SDA export, where you will configure the max concurrency into more than one to achieve multiple threads processing incoming requests, right?
Basically, I'm trying to do mono-threading because I'm trying to integrate messages to a backend system, and I've got a limitation on that backend system, and I have to make sure my integration is done one at a time. And reading the documentation, I can see that setting those two properties in the activation spec should do the same as with a GMS adapter with another two properties, which are number of listeners and...
That's right. So you want a single thread, the request process.
Exactly.
Time.
Exactly. And what I'm observing is not this, basically.
What binding are you using?
I'm using SCA binding.
SCA binding?
Yes.
Yeah. Configuring max concurrency to 1 should single thread the MDB to pick up the incoming messages one
yes.
at a time.
And the max batch size to 1 should pick up one message at the time as well. So I should have monothreading by doing this, right?
When you say should have multi-thread, well, this should have single-threaded the execution.
Okay. Okay, so I don't know why I'm not seeing this behavior. Okay, I just wanted to make sure... trying to do things correctly.
Yeah, it seems correct, although you might want to collect SCA trace and have IBM support to further assist you.
Mm, okay.
But
I've opened up PMR already, but
okay.
You haven't. Too.
At this time, we have no one else in the audio queue.
Thank you, Marcella. And thank you, everyone, for your participation in the live Q&A period. And at this point in time, I would like to move on to slide number 35 and pass the presentation back to Lalitha for a summary of today's session.
Thank you, everyone, for participating today. And we discussed a few ways to avoid SCA problems through proper application design. And you also saw some resources to troubleshoot SCA problems. Hopefully you found this session useful, and if you have further questions, please feel free to contact us. Thank you, and I'll pass it back to Joseph.
Thank you, Lalitha. And at this point in time, we will conclude the OpenMind session.